huddle up, Pokes fans. As a proud sponsor of UW Athletics, YO Lotto is giving you more ways to win. Because you asked and we heard ya. Now, every Sunday after a Pokes football game, you get buy one, get one free Cowboy draw tickets. That's right. Every Sunday after a game from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., no matter the score, you get more. So let's get out there and ride for the brand. Go Pokes! The lottery is a form of entertainment. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 or older to play.
Welcome into the Roaring Repeater Podcast here on 7220sports.com. I'm your host, Cody Tucker, joined as always by Jared Newland. We also have a special guest in the our beautiful downtown Cheyenne offices, which, by the way, we're in our original office, and it just feels so much better. Everything looks better, feels better, smells better, all better. But Ryan Thorburn, Director of Communication and Creative Strategy. Ryan Thorburn, University of Wyoming. Thank you for joining us, coming over the hill.
That's right. I have one of those fancy athletic department titles that I'm sure Jared used to have an interesting one back in the day. But,
actually turned
and
down.
And I can never remember it. I just say I'm the in-house media guy for Wyoming Athletics.
There you go.
Did you come with that title yourself? Or
I did not.
I actually turned down a title. I said, no, I don't need to be one of those. There's too many of them as there is.
My title is just resident asshole, and we were doing that right before we came on the air here. Our bitch session, which we didn't record, luckily for you people out there. First thing before we get into the Northern Iowa, Caden Anderson, Utah, all that stuff, because we have Ryan here, I'd like to talk to him about just what last Thursday was like as Josh Allen himself breaks his own news about his jersey being retired at the Nevada game. And I know you guys had big plans for that. There was going to be, you know, you interviewed Josh a few weeks ago over a Zoom call. I think people will be interested to hear how that talk went and just what it was like, the hectic stuff going on behind the scenes that nobody really knows about.
Yeah, I mean, our plan was, and we recorded a video with Josh where he said, and we still showed the video, obviously, and it said, hey, essentially, hey, Pokes fans, this is Josh Allen with the Buffalo Bills. I'll see you November 22nd, when I come back to Laramie for the Nevada game, go Pokes. Mm-hmm. We wanted that video to be like the breaking news ticker, and you know the crowd would have went wild. They still obviously go wild when they see Josh's face.
Yeah,
it's hard to keep a secret like that, and I was impressed that it lasted as long as it did. Josh obviously went on a podcast and just spilled the beans and said, you know, I'll be back in Laramie, and it's cool. And it really worked out great, in my opinion. I mean, the department, the stress level from Tom Berman to, you know, our facilities guys to Nick Seaman, communications director, was pretty high last week because of the renovation of War Memorial Stadium, literally going up to kickoff. Yeah. And even this week, we're still working on some things with it. So the stress level was already high. And then all of a sudden, the news is out, the big news that Josh is coming back. And I think it worked out great because, you know, we still went with our plan earlier. We, you know, had Nick's release go out, then a graphic, then a video, then my story. Mm-hmm. And it all worked out, and especially for the ticket office, because on Monday they didn't have to worry about selling 15,000 tickets. They were long gone.
Yeah, no question. No question. When I saw him announce that, it was one of those things where, you know, being as close, like we talked about it last week, being as close to the program as we are, it's kind of, you know, it was kind of a – it was a secret, but it wasn't really a secret. Knew something was going down, obviously. Evan Sabota's not wearing 17 anymore. Malik Singleton's not wearing 17. Nobody else is wearing that number. You know, the Hall of Fame, obviously Josh was inducted on Friday night. So we knew something was going down, just didn't know when it was going to be announced. And I remember you and I talking during the offseason. We were like, what would be a date that would be even a good potential for him to come? And Nevada was the only one. It was the only chance he had because the Bills play on Thursday night.
Yeah, the schedule really did not work out with the Bills' schedule. Like, we were hoping they'd have an open date for the border war or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you guys wish he would have been here last weekend.
Absolutely. And it's just great. Yeah, if he could have come for his own Hall of Fame induction, that would be great. I think the cool thing is, though, and I hear this a lot from a small percentage of fans that don't really get it, is like, how come Josh has never been back? Josh doesn't care about Wyoming. Josh isn't going to come back until Tom Berman retires. All these ridiculous things.
Yeah.
I think what we know now and what I've always known is Josh Allen loves the University of Wyoming. He's a super smart guy. He gets his origin story.
Yeah.
Wyoming offered him. No one else really did. He came to Wyoming and became a superstar, obviously. And, you know, I have one anecdote. I don't think Tom Berman will mind me sharing this, but obviously Josh's parents were at the Hall of Fame on his behalf and then had to hightail it to Buffalo for the insane Buffalo-Baltimore game. And from what I understand, you know, they have this plaque from the Hall of Fame with Josh's young mug on it. And I think they were like, okay, well, we'll leave this here and pick it up, you know, on November 22nd or whenever they come back. And Josh told them, no, bring me my plaque.
Awesome.
He wants his plaque. He loves Wyoming. He's very proud to be a Hall of Famer. He was effusive of his praise of the other inductees. I think it's cool that Casey Bramlett, obviously a class act.
Yes.
Didn't feel overshadowed and, you know, joked that, you know, he's going to a Bills game with his kids. Mm. That's what they wanted for Christmas.
And Windling, too.
Windling,
who was a Buffalo Bill.
That, you know, his kids are like, during his speech, he's like, my boys are like, Dad, did you play with Josh? And I'm like, no, I'm a little older. And they're like, ah, too bad. He was awesome.
Josh better get those guys in a box.
It would be awesome if Josh and Casey could get a picture with Casey's kid in Buffalo.
It would. When they're out there. I love, because we talk to so many kids right now that, and also just put out a story today myself about people don't understand the history of things anymore, and these kids don't have a clue about history. And that, I know, Jared, we've talked a lot about that. Drives me absolutely nuts. You know, and I asked Jay yesterday, like, are you going to spend any time telling your team, you know, this fan base hates Utah? Like, I grew up hating Utah with a burning desire and a burning passion. They just don't have a clue. I've asked guys who wear the number 23, do you know who wore that before you? They don't have a clue. So to hear that Josh Allen is praising the guys that are in there with him and knows who John Windling and Casey Bramlett are, that warms my heart, I must say.
Well, and it works out, I think, better for the schedule and for everything anyway, having it November 22nd, because that game probably would have drew 15,000 people.
It always depends on weather and how
and
the
team's
doing.
Now it's going to be sold out.
Yeah.
And to my recollection, in the modern era, it's probably the only second sellout in November history. With the one that I remember is 1988 against UTEP when they wrapped up the WAC championship, and it was on CBS that afternoon.
Yep.
I don't recall another November game being a sellout.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
I think it works out better this way, everything the way it panned out. So
yeah. Well, let's hope the stakes and the score are the same as that UTEP.
No doubt.
No, 51-6 would be great, wouldn't it?
Little backflip from who's doing the Mitch Donahue backflip this year, Tyce Wesslin?
Boy, you got to be pretty athletic and 240, don't you?
You do. That would be the absolute icing on the cake for this whole thing for Tom Berman and company, would be Cowboys playing for a title that day or in contention for a title that day and the weather's perfect. Would be just fantastic. Ryan, I wanted to ask you, because Josh is a hot commodity, obviously, and that's another thing you were talking about, how people questioning Josh's love for Wyoming. Can we just admit the guy's freaking busy? He's busy as hell. He's on every commercial. He's a quarterback. He's the MVP. So it's not like we can call Josh and have a one-on-one with the guy. I'm curious how that went, talking to him one-on-one, and I believe Kevin McKinney was on the call with you as well, he said. How did that all go? How can you kind of talk to the fans about how the conversation went?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, we only had about 20 minutes or so with Josh. I think we made the most of it by far. It was a Zoom, and it's great that Kevin McKinney, you know, was a part of it. Obviously, he had to be a part of it. He's as legendary around here as Josh Allen.
Yeah.
But it was great because when I wasn't here when Josh was here. I was, you know, in the Pacific Northwest covering other elite quarterbacks, and I watched it from afar and was just mesmerized, as everyone else was, like this talent that Wyoming had. But it was great because when Kevin's face pops up on the screen, Josh looked like that 19-year-old baby-faced kid, and McKinney can joke with him like, oh, are you surprised I'm still alive and that sort of thing. And so it was very fun and loose because Josh went back to college in that instant when
just
he saw
reverted,
Kevin. And then you know, Kevin obviously asked him some scripted questions, which were played. His answers, the Bills were great. They filmed it right in his face about the Hall of Fame, and that those were played at the Hall of Fame. And then, you know, me and Kevin had a chance to ask him some more questions later. And I wanted to keep it light. So my first one, I was like, Josh, I'm going to get the controversial question out of the way. It's going to upset you, but I just want to get out of the way. In his face, like, what are you talking about? And I just said, Applebee's in Laramie is closed. And he said, I'm not coming. And then he's like, wait, is Born in a Barn still there? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay. And we got Double Doves. I'll be there November 22nd.
Too bad Grand Avenue Pizza wasn't still open, because he did that Barstool pizza not contest, but rating with El Presidente, and he named the Thai Pie was his favorite pizza.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. And if you want to read my story on Pokes Insider at goyo.com, his quotes are so good about what we were talking about earlier, his love for Wyoming and his rise at Wyoming. And, you know, I asked him what his favorite moment was. He said snow game, CSU. He can name every catch, not just Drew Monin, but Overstreet's score. He just pulls all these players out of thin air that I don't even remember their names.
Nope.
A lot of them that aren't even in the story. And you're like, wow, he really loved his teammates at Wyoming.
Well, and he had James Price with him as his caddy at the Lake Tahoe thing. And then obviously when it comes to Nevada, that's one of the first things he brought up, is that James Price is a coach on Nevada staff this year. So, you know, the casual fan can't even tell you who James Price was, because he wasn't some big lights out receiver.
Go back to the Potato Bowl highlights and you'll see a lot of James Price.
Yeah, no doubt. Good stuff, man. The other thing I kind of wanted to ask you about, and I know you two have been, I've never been to one of these Hall of Fame dinners, and I need that to change soon, and this would have been the time to do it, because Casey Bramlett was my Josh Allen. You know, they didn't win a lot of games, but that made me love and respect him even more, because he is a tough dude. Very little help from his offensive line when he played, and he'd sling it all over the yard, and I just love that guy. Talk about another guy who didn't forget where he came from and never will. Him, John Windling, Adam Waddell's mom. Adam, of course, been on the Roaring Repeater a lot with us. What was the whole vibe like of the night, and how cool is that to see the emotion from these people that are – this is their real chance to get back in the sun for a day.
Yeah, it's a really cool event. Everyone gets dressed up, or mostly dressed up, and because it's a special night for these guys.
Yeah.
You know, you could feel the emotion – in a John Windling or a Bramlett. I mean, there's a lot of joking around. Jeff Hewson, the, you know, Rockies color man, does a great job. I think in old days, speeches might have went on a little bit too long. So now each inductee comes up and Jeff Hewson does a Q&A with him, and it's
nice.
Fun banter. You know, it's really cool. And, you know, it's just a great night and something these guys will always remember. And even Josh's parents got really emotional,
yeah.
You know, just to this theme about them. They know where their kid came, and you know, his dad said, you know, I always knew he was special. He just needed a platform, and
yeah.
This was a great platform for him to take off to where he's gone like a spaceship. So, you know, his mom, you know, gave a shout out to the Wingert parents. They're really good friends, and some of the other parents that have been along this journey with them, and, you know, her voice was cracking. So it's that way for all of them. I mean, you get to learn the story about a Kurt Jemerson,
mm-hmm.
which I knew from, you know, doing a basketball book years ago, but he got to tell his story and, you know, all the racial
first
stuff
black player,
he overcame.
Right? First black player in Wyoming history?
First scholarship
okay.
black player is what we refer to him now, because when I was doing my basketball book, I found a picture from the 30s where Wyoming had a black basketball player, Taft Harris, which is wild, because just thinking about what the guys – in the 60s went through.
Yeah.
That was a lot earlier.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just great. Mike Mulvaney was outstanding.
Baseball.
I really loved the baseball teams of the late 80s. Mm. I mean, the uniforms, the home runs.
Yeah.
I mean.
And thank you, Torrington, for bringing those unis back.
No doubt.
Just to date Jared and myself, the late 80s, you know, we weren't here yet. We're not that old, but we were old enough and in high school where you get that thing like Wyoming is good at everything.
Yeah.
Football, basketball, baseball,
yeah.
whatever it is.
Yeah.
Those were the glory years. So it's fun to go reminisce, painful as it may be, that, you know, Bill Kennenberg was there, but baseball doesn't exist, but the memories do.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Really good stuff. I talked to you about it Saturday. Tom Berman, this thing's always sold out anyway, but Tom, if I can have one gripe, I suppose, stream this thing. Charge $5 and stream this thing. And another thing I wanted to bring up, which was a good idea by you on Saturday we talked about, you could make a Josh Allen mug for this game against Nevada for $17 and give it all to NIL. The mug doesn't even have to have anything in it. You can just tack on a little more.
$17.17 refills with the beer.
Yeah.
And make it a 32-ouncer, though.
There you go.
So you actually get your money.
I like it. We should be a marketing team.
Is it doable?
You know what? I do know Chad Baldwin pretty well. We went down to a Broncos practice together, the PR person for the university. And I love the fact that the university is getting into this Josh Allen thing.
I love it.
And,
yep.
You know, obviously they paid for a Super Bowl ad that, you know, has done a lot. They're sponsoring. The University of Wyoming is a sponsor of a Buffalo Bills home game this year against Tampa Bay. There'll be Wyoming fans out there tailgating with Bills Mafia. Bills Mafia is coming here for the Utah game.
Yep.
So I think it's really cool. And I don't know the kid's name. I should have looked it up. But my sister lives in Douglas. She runs the museum there. So she deals with the Douglas budget once in a while. And she said there's a kid there that just graduated from Wyoming who's from Buffalo, New York, and now is living in Wyoming. He loves Wyoming. And why do you think he came here? I mean, he has to answer the question every 5 minutes when he tells people where he's from. It's because he wanted to go where Josh Allen went to school.
A couple handful of those kind of guys, and you're paying off your $300,000 investment you're making to be the sponsor of the Buffalo Bills game. I love it, too. I love the thinking. Everybody, Wyoming always gets so much crap for being reactionary and not going out and trying new things. I'm into it. I'm absolutely into it. Let's talk some football, fellas. 31-7, Wyoming over Northern Iowa. In a lot of ways, it's as dominant as it sounds. I was excited to get into the press box and write a story about how Wyoming's getting the ball to all their playmakers. Last week, it wasn't John Michael Gillenborg. This week, they got him involved early. They're running the ball at will. And then Caden Anderson gets absolutely lit up and changes the entire narrative of this thing. He is fine. Had some bruising up top. Surprised it wasn't a lot worse than that. It had collarbone to me, ribs written all over it. And saw him yesterday walking through the parking lot at War Memorial Stadium and said, "It's good to see you standing." And he said, "Yeah, that guy got me pretty good." And he most certainly did. Cowboys, of course, almost 400 yards of total offense. Once again, 189 on the ground, 190 through the air. It's been balanced. It's been good. The defense has been incredible, fellas. Once again, only two missed tackles in this game. The Wyoming Cowboys have missed 11 tackles through 2 weeks. Braden Johnson, it's just got to make you almost sick to your stomach. I can't even imagine what he thinks, that he's been stuck in Shawnee, Oklahoma for the last 3 years playing in front of five people. You almost want him to petition the NCAA after the year and go, "Hey, man, you should have seen what I was playing in. This guy is really special." Jay Sauvell said he wishes he would have been on this team 3 years ago, last year, whatever. He was, once again, 91.2 grade from Pro Football Focus this week, which is up from 90.3 the first week. Evan Eller's been great. Enoch Sibomana played really well this week. 28 guys saw the field this week. Last year, you were lucky to get around 16, 17, 18, 22 in the first game, 28 in this game. And the one thing that's really stuck out to me, guys, obviously 9 new starters, all new backups. 33 times they have gotten to the opposing quarterback in the last 2 weeks, whether that's a hurry, a hit, 6 of those have been sacks. Ben Florentine's been lights out in the middle. Jared, what was your main takeaway from this one?
Well, luckily I was able to watch the first half. I was at a wedding last week.
Yeah.
Watched the first half, and during the ceremony, I got an ultimatum: do not look at your phone. Well, they were doing something on the other side of the stage. It was an outdoor wedding, so I looked down, and there was another UW guy behind me. We had a nice little smile, but it was right when Caden got hurt. Yeah. So I had to put it back in my pocket. I didn't know what happened.
Yeah.
I saw the fumble, but I did not know what exactly happened. So I rewatched it last night.
Max White apparently missed his assignment, but also – you know, Caden's locked in on his receiver downfield.
Well, and Nate Kreckman and Jared Petrino thought it was the right tackle that missed the assignment. But maybe between both of them, they didn't communicate. I don't know.
Yeah,
but that guy
not.
Did come through like a bullet.
Yeah.
Actually, rewatching that game, they had several guys make really big hits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were laying some
Jalen Sargent got laid out too.
Yes, and I'm surprised he got up because that was right in the middle of his back, small of his back. But overall, I thought it was a really good win. Not a great one, but a good win.
That's what you do against an FCS opponent, right? But, which the Cowboys have struggled to do.
And we talked about Wyoming had to get on them early, and they suffered a little bit, you know, stunk it up a little bit there for midway through the first, midway through the second type of a deal, but really put the foot on the gas pedal, and the run game got going. I mean, was there 8 different guys with rushes?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
I thought maybe one of the better plays of the day was Caden checking out of the run on that touchdown pass to Durr.
Yeah.
I mean, because he stood there for a while, and he was making different, and he finally checked out of it and saw the one-on-one, threw it in a perfect spot.
I also, speaking of checkdowns, I love Landon Sims' checkdown late in the game when he got the ball to Sam Toad Harris, and we got to kind of see what the Rave's been all about since
Well,
camp.
And talking about Sims, when he had a little pressure, almost looked like a naked bootleg the way he did it, but then got the ball out and squared up and made that throw.
Yep.
That was a great throw.
It was a beauty.
Yep. And won the turnover battle. Yep. O-line probably didn't protect like they wanted to. But overall did a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great job. And cause they gave up 4 sacks and I know Caden tripped kind of over his own feet on the one that was like a loss of 20 or something like that, but he may have been able to get out of that one. And then, Edmondson 48.6 yard average on punts.
It looked better.
Yeah. And the one that he sailed into the end zone. I mean, if he could have got that to check up on the 5, that would have been probably a 50 yard net then.
Yep.
So
he's got a hell of a leg. It's definitely a difference. Ryan, what were some of your main takeaways from this one?
Through 2 games, I would say my main takeaway and the theme of the season is Jay Sauvel, the general manager, has really helped Jay Sauvel, the head coach.
No question.
We've talked about it since the Washington State game when Jay flew back, met with his core guys, and then went about the process of filling the holes with the transfer portal. I know portal can be a 4-letter word around here, but a lot of these guys you mentioned came out of the portal. You have a nice mix of guys they've recruited out of high school and developed versus guys that came out of the portal. I mean, Braden Johnson came out of the portal. Evan Eller came out of the portal. They are carrying on the tradition of linebacker U at Wyoming, where it used to be guys that developed like Logan Wilson and Chad Muma. Now it's kind of a mix. You still have Gary Rutherford out there and some other promising young guys that are being developed.
He could be a starter. Siba Mana could be a starter. Ethan Stolsatz could be a starter. I mean, they had a real problem back there last year, and now they have a problem where they don't have enough snaps for everybody. And like last week, Braden Johnson is their highest graded performer. He was on the field for only 36 snaps. The week before at Akron, he was on for every snap, but he doesn't need to be. And honestly, like we talked about with the FCS thing, it couldn't have ended any more perfect, right? Aside from the Caden Anderson thing, you've got Tegan Seeds and Cody Crawford playing on the defensive front. You've got David Leonard on the back end and Tyson Dean getting some playing time. That's exactly what you want when you play one of these teams at home.
And you know Jay Sauvel and Aaron Bull, it ended pretty well against Boise State and Washington State, but these are defensive guys.
Mm-hmm.
Wyoming is a defensive program, run the ball program.
Yep.
And those two areas are night and day better. The defense overall looks pretty formidable. Now the running game with Sam Scott, Teron Kelman coming out. You mentioned Toad Harris. What a great talent he is.
Yeah.
And even at quarterback, you have the developed guy in Caden Anderson, who I think can lead this team pretty far. But I don't know about you guys. If Landon Sims had to play against Utah and Caden had to get healthy, I would be okay with that. I think he would give them a shot on Saturday.
Yeah, so obviously that was the big question after the game, right? Like, if Caden can't go, do you guys have faith in Landon? And, of course, what are they going to say? No. But this seems sincere. And it was guys who are roommates with this guy. He is loved. Landon Sims is loved in that locker room. And it's not just because he's a cool guy and a nice guy. He can play a little ball. Like you mentioned, that throw, That throw was incredible. He also had a 12-yard scamper for a first down in this one. This guy had two left torn ACLs, and he can move. And we joked with him yesterday in a little scrum that, you know, you can run a faster 40 than Caden Anderson. He was like, I don't know how you want me to answer this, because hell yeah, he'd run it faster. He'd whip his ass. It's night and day.
Is it me or just maybe watching it on TV? But Sam Scott looks like he has another gear this year. When he went around the corner on that first touchdown, he ran away from that cornerback that was actually, it looked like he was maybe going to blitz and then got stuck and then went to, when he saw it was going to be a handoff.
Yeah.
And he was just too late getting there. But I thought Sam was going to get pushed out maybe the 7-8 yard line. He just ran by the guy.
You sure did. He looks good, man.
He's obviously, speaking of linebackers, still looks like a linebacker. He was recruited to play linebacker. What I love about Sam Scott is, you know, he's been patient. He's had a lot of carries, some moments. Obviously, the walk-off two-point conversion against Texas Tech will always be a great memory for everyone. But I was talking to Toad Harris the other day, and there's a lot of respect in that room for Sam Scott. And he said, what you saw is Sam Scott's the man, but whenever he raises his hand and needs a blow, the rest of us can pick up right where he left off and do the same thing.
No doubt.
And each one brings a different dynamic, too. I mean, you have your power run, and then, Kelman, you have your power run with some speed, and then, of course, Tor Harris is just a different gear.
And I thought even on Max White's run where he got face masked, that might have been a huge gainer as well. Yeah. And we haven't even seen DeMajah Harris yet.
Yeah, I think that room's five or six deep, and it's just hard to play that many guys. And right now we have the top three is kind of separate a little bit.
Hard to believe in this game, Sam Harris and Sam Scott lead the way with 8 carries and 7 for Teron Kelman. So it's even more of a perfect case scenario, minus the Anderson injury, that you get a lot of guys playing a lot of minutes, because Sam had 29 against Akron, and it was his show.
Well, look at the average per carry.
Yeah.
You take away those sacks, it's way up there.
And if this was Craig Bohl coaching this team, they wouldn't have thrown the ball one time in the second half, and they would have ran for 350 yards. So I love
it. And nailed it on the one.
And nailed it. Yeah, and nailed it. For sure. All right, guys. You know, obvious win this Saturday. It's, you know, piece of cake, Utah. Might as well just put it in the books. This team doesn't look good at all. Before we get into how bad Utah is, let's talk about some memories of this team. You know, we're all old enough where I had a guy today go, who hates Utah? I thought we're supposed to hate CSU and BYU and Boise State. Boise State doesn't hold a candle to my former hatred of the University of Utah. And in fact, Air Force is above Boise State when it comes to hatred for a guy who's born and raised here, who's 41 years old like I am.
But yours is the hatred for the entire state.
Absolutely. But Utah in general, just seeing that. I remember Steve Smith being in the war and just a little worm. I couldn't stand. I hate Utah. I've always hated them. but in the history, when I think back, Ryan and I talked about it the other day. The 1999 meeting in Salt Lake City was so sloppy all the way around, but you can just never forget Darnell Arsenault going out on a stretcher because Jarnigan and Chuck Ora lit him up into the back of the end zone. He hits the back of the goalpost, fumbles the ball. Wyoming pounces on it. Courtney Barnes pounces on it. Wyoming absolutely rolled that night in Rice-Eccles Stadium.
And what'd they call it? Just a major concussion.
Major concussion.
They didn't know what else to call it.
Even the university called it a major concussion. So that one really sticks out to me. That was Dana Dimmel's team. And it really sticks out because, man, Wyoming has had zero success in that building since. And then the other one, 2006, the last win, unfortunately, for the Cowboys in this series. Unexpectedly, unless I just wasn't reading the newspapers that week, Wyoming comes running out in those gorgeous 1996 uniforms, 1993, 94, 95, 96, just gorgeous uniforms. Brett Ratliff's the quarterback for Utah. They hadn't given up a sack all year. John Windling has a huge sack in that one. Aaron Robbins has – everybody had a sack. You get a sack, you get a sack. Wyoming whipped their ass that day.
Well, and they forced 6 turnovers in that game.
Yeah.
Up 24-0 at the half.
Yeah.
Pick 6 to open up the third quarter.
Stinson had the pick 6,
And so it's 31-0, and it's like the route is on.
That was beautiful.
And the total yards was only 302 to 144.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think in 31 points you would have a heck of a lot more.
Yeah. But
short field
turnovers.
All the time.
Yeah.
Turnovers. And then I think part of the Whittingham onside kick was from this game as well.
Guaranteed.
A little bit of a payback.
Guaranteed.
Saying that you guys caught us off guard. Good for you. But I know that you didn't truly guarantee a win. You said it out of the side of your mouth. Let's take it to the next level. But, Joe, this is for beating us the way you did in Laramie, too.
It's kind of like Dave Christensen getting that payback the following year on Air Force after the Calhoun thing went down. Wyoming, Brett Smith, they could have scored more that night in Colorado Springs. How about you, Ryan? What sticks out to you when you think about these damn Utes?
Well, my life is interesting in terms of Utah because I grew up in Casper, but in fourth and fifth grade, my dad got transferred to Salt Lake City. So I lived in Salt Lake City in fourth and fifth grade. And at that time, it was basketball for me. Utah had Danny Vrains and Chambers, and BYU had Danny Ainge and all these things. Wyoming obviously had Tubb Bradley and some great players. So it was more of a basketball rivalry thing for me, even all the way up to, you know, when Marcus Bailey and Josh Davis beat them for the championship in front of however many people in the AA. I think it was more of a basketball rivalry and hatred for me with Wyoming. Because when I was a little kid living there, their stadium was horrible.
Yeah.
They had wood bleachers. We went, you know, to some games, and it was like, it was not an event at all. BYU was kind of an event back then, but for football, but Utah really wasn't. It was Utah getting the Salt Lake City Olympics changed their fortunes. That and hiring Urban Meyer / Kyle Whittingham. Without those three things, they would not be in a power conference. And their stadium is spectacular because of the Olympics. They're downtown now. You can get a beer. It's a normal city. It's obviously a beautiful city. So I don't have a ton of football hatred. I actually loved covering Kyle Whittingham's teams in the Pac-12 because it took them 2 or 3 years, and then they started mauling teams. Oregon's toughest game almost every year was at Utah at Rice-Eccles Stadium. They would have beat them the year Marcus Mariota won the Heisman and they went to the national championship, except the Utah player dropped the ball on his way into the end zone, and an alert Oregon player saw what a ridiculous thing he just did and returned it 99 yards the other way. So one memory I do have from my days at the Branding Iron as a student, 1992, I drove over there and covered the Wyoming at Utah game. And I believe Ryan Yarbrough had a very long touchdown to open the game, 7-0 Wyoming. The final, I looked it up, was 38-7 Utah. And then back in those days, reporters went into the locker room to interview players. So I went into the most somber, frightening locker room I've ever been in as at that point as a young journalist, and had to interview Wyoming players after that, which actually really helped me with my professional career once I went into professional locker room. So I'll never forget that. But then in 1993, Wyoming beat them and tied for the WAC championship. So that was a really impressive turnaround for the Pokes. But I don't really have a lot of Utah memories, actually. I came down from Denver to watch the Urban Meyer year, and it was delayed and all that. It was a nightmare game. And they obviously took care of Wyoming.
Am I crazy? Did you feel it in the air that night that Wyoming had a real shot in that game? Or am I just nuts?
I did until that delay.
Me too. Me too.
I think that just angered Utah, and they were obviously a wagon that year.
Yeah.
And the score was a lot closer. I mean,
yeah, it wasn't a total beatdown.
No, but Wyoming had a couple of garbage touchdowns there towards the end and stuff like that. But you're right. At the very beginning, there was a lot of, I mean, the crowd atmosphere was great for, and yes, it was cold, but it wasn't the coldest day ever, like some people were claiming.
It got cold really quick once Alex Smith got going.
Once that, I do remember that I was working there at the time, and I just went and stood in the stands because there was nothing more we could do anymore. And so I was just standing with some friends up in the stands, and there was cases of beer just in the snow in the stands. I mean, the security was non-existent that after the delay.
But for me, Cody, I know how you feel about Utah, and I get it. And I felt that way as a kid for sure.
Yeah.
But for me, I didn't feel that much of anything when BYU came in last year. I was actually like proud of them for coming to Laramie. Thanks for coming.
I feel the same way about Utah.
And that's how I feel about Utah this year. But those two teams, I mean, Utah went to the Pac-12 and played in Rose Bowls.
Yeah.
BYU has a chance maybe to be a very, very good Big 12 program. I have Colorado State number one with a bullet, and they will always be the team that
I agree.
Just don't care for. Yeah. And they are going to a conference, you know, that is called the Pac-12, but it is not the Pac-12. So I don't respect that.
Yeah, I don't think it's I think it's a no-brainer when it comes to CSU. I mean, obviously they've got all of our attention for sure, but I thought Utah, you know, maybe there was some jealousy involved too, that, you know, how did they be, like you mentioned, the Olympics. I mean, they got a golden horseshoe up their ass, and they took full advantage of that. And Kyle Whittingham, as much as I still am not thrilled with that onside kick, which I actually got kicked out of Rice-Eccles Stadium right after that happened, there's a toughness to that program that is undeniable, and it starts up front on both lines of scrimmage. They're really tough. The one thing I think about, and I had the chance to interview him, and I'm going to reintroduce the story probably sometime today on social. I ran into a guy I really, really like from Utah, believe it or not, is Ron McBride, the head coach of the Utes back in the day before Urban Meyer showed up. He's just salt of the earth. And I will tell you, there's no problem telling you about the jealousy I had back then, because you had Sonny Lubick down in Fort Collins. You had Fisher DeBerry in Colorado Springs. You had Lavelle Edwards, who was sneaky funny. He was a sneaky funny dude in Provo. Then you have Ron McBride, and they're on commercials together, and they're playing off each other. And Wyoming, who's Wyoming's coach this year? Who's going to be Wyoming's coach next year? Who's, you know, Wyoming's going through coaches like underwear while our rivals are sitting there, you know, with these long-term, long-time coaches with all this success. Because you talk to old-timers who played for the Wyoming Cowboys, they say, BYU sucked. They were terrible before the Black 14. That wasn't a rival. We used to just go in and kick their ass. It was just another day. Lavelle Edwards made that an incredible program. And the same can be said for Colorado State in a lot of ways. And Ron McBride, we talked about it yesterday, Ryan. When I was a kid, you looked at Utah as kind of like, Wyoming and Utah are pretty equal. They're kind of meddling in the middle of the road. Sometimes they pop up, sometimes they don't. And then once Urban Meyer came in, it's been a whole new ballgame ever since. And I don't know if there's any truth to this, and Kevin McKinney would be the Yoda to ask, and I have asked him, and he doesn't know. I feel like I heard back in the day that Urban Meyer was leaving Bowling Green. And I had always heard, because Wyoming's job was open at the same time as well. And I don't mean to start rumors if there's no truth to this whatsoever, but I always heard it was between Wyoming and Utah, and he chose Utah, and Joe Glenn came to Wyoming. Have you guys ever heard that?
I've never heard that before.
I just started a rumor. Damn it. He made the right decision, you'd have to say. And, you know, maybe Urban obviously got his start under Sonny Lubick and probably didn't care for Wyoming much either.
Well, there was – I read a story in the Deseret News. It wasn't behind a paywall. I didn't pay for it, Cody. But it was written by Joe Coles. And the reason I'm bringing this up is it was all about why Utah is going to Wyoming. And he interviewed Chris Hill, because Chris Hill is the one that scheduled it in 2017.
Yeah.
He retires. Then here comes Harlan in as AD, and he just kept it.
Yeah.
Said it made sense.
Kept it and kept it through COVID.
Yeah, yeah, and kept it through that. But yeah. It was well written, but it had some snarkiness to it. Like, why a program like Utah would go to Laramie? I'm like, you used to play in this league. It's not like you've graduated up to the SEC.
Right.
I mean, you're in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And it makes sense geographically. Or Big 12, yeah. But, I mean, seriously, just the way it was written, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And I just, so if you get a chance, it's a free article. It's just, but it pissed me off.
I could kind of tell some snark during Kyle Whittingham's press conference today. And even somebody basically mentioned, and you can't get mad at him, because we mentioned the same thing about Northern Iowa. This is their Super Bowl. Like, don't fall into the trap. And Kyle Whittingham said, yeah, absolutely it is. And our guys need to know that.
Well, like Scott Van Pelt always says on his Sports Center, when Wyoming's on bad beats upsetting somebody, things get weird in Laramie.
They do.
They're going to have to get weird Saturday night.
They're going to have to get very weird. Utah has a 51-32-1 advantage in the overall series. This one started all the way back in 1900. That was a 15-0 Wyoming win. I'm looking at Winsipedia right now, and there are a hell of a lot of red stripes in this series of late. These two teams have not met since 2010. That was a 30-6 Utah win. We already talked about Wyoming's last win, which was back in 2006. In the late 80s, like you talked about, Ryan, when all was right in the world in Laramie, Wyoming, the Cowboys went on a nice little five-game run against these guys and really took advantage. The other thing I can't help but think about when it comes to Utah is 1996, when Wyoming gets absolutely screwed out of a bowl game after going to the WAC title game against BYU. It's Utah that gets in a bowl game that year with four losses compared to Wyoming's 10-2 record, and they just took the number four team in the country to the deep end of the pool.
Thanks, Carl Benson.
That still pisses me
off
as well.
That bowl was in Tucson, too, and we've seen how Wyoming fans actually show up in Tucson.
No question. No question. All right, fellas. Obviously, I was joking, badly joking, about this Utah team. They're incredible. Jay Sauvel said yesterday, there are no weaknesses. And he's not wrong. He's just not wrong. I wrote about it today. It's on the website right now. This team has scored 17 offensive drives already. They've scored touchdowns, 14 of them. And then just to add to it, Jackson Benet returned an interception 46 yards for a touchdown last week in a 63-9 rout of Cal Poly. It's the 22nd straight season the Utes have registered a pick six, which is just phenomenal. That's an NCAA record, of course. Utah, the 20th ranked team in the country. 11 trips in the red zone, 11 touchdowns. The number one defense, or the number one offense in the land on third down, 23 of 30. They've punted just five times. One of those, no doubt, last week was a mercy boot. They were at the 36-yard line of Cal Poly with a 21-6 lead. And then I'm listening to Kyle Whittingham today. He says, I don't think we hit a rhythm and a groove on offense last week like we did the week before. That's scary as hell. Some more scary stuff. 53 points a game, tied for eighth in the FBS. 505 yards per game, that's 22nd. 2 of 2 on fourth down, 280 yards rushing per game, that's 8th. They hold onto the ball 34 minutes a game, 0 turnovers. Not to mention, Devin Dampier ran for 207 yards against Wyoming last year as the quarterback in New Mexico. His number one target, Ryan Davis, is also with him from Albuquerque. Their running back, Wayshon Parker, was at Washington State last year. Wyoming got to see him in the season finale. The only common denominator here for Wyoming, Wyoming got the last laugh in both of those games last year somehow, some way. But now this team's loaded with weapons, including a pair of All-American offensive tackles. Last year at New Mexico, guys, Devin Dampier got sacked five times, which was the best mark in the country at New Mexico. That's how elusive this guy is. Now he has an offensive line. So you have to get past those cats if you're even dreaming about getting to Devin Dampier. I guess just, Brian, let's start with you. Initial thoughts when it comes to this Utah football team, which in my opinion might be the best team we've seen in Laramie since maybe, what, Colt McCoy in Texas?
I'm not thrilled with the non-conference scheduling football gods because Arizona State was supposed to be horrible last year. BYU was supposed to be down last year.
Yeah.
One's in the playoff. One was almost in the playoff.
Yeah.
You look at Utah last year, they were very, very gettable.
Now they're just pissed.
If they would have maybe gone to the Big 12 championship game, Whittingham would be on a beach somewhere or in the mountains somewhere, whatever he likes to do, and they would have a new coach.
Yep.
But instead, he's come back with a vengeance to win the Big 12 this year and go out on with style points. So yep. That's just the way it works. This is a great Utah team. I don't know if it's going to be like their 04 team or their 08 team or any of those classic teams, but so far they look like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the good thing is Wyoming is dramatically better than they were last year.
Yes.
And they have some special leadership, which, you know, the team that upset Texas Tech in a similar spot had. So I actually have a good feeling that this is going to be a good game. I think Jay Sauvel obviously has a lot of respect for Kyle Whittingham, voted them number 10 in the coaches poll.
Yep.
That Wyoming will be prepared and ready, and obviously it's a great opportunity for Wyoming. Unfortunately, Whittingham knows what Laramie's all about, so I don't think he's going to let anyone overlook Wyoming. But, you know, they've never been here other than Stevenson,
yeah.
The wide Dampier. Receiver.
Yeah.
They don't know what it's like, so once those buses park, you know, crazy things can happen, like you said.
Jared, Brian Hendricks, defensive end coach, tells me yesterday, I think the biggest thing with us right now is making sure that we keep the ball inside and in front of us, adding that the focus this week is a simple one. Worry about doing your job, not the guy across from you. He said we need to limit the explosive plays because that's something they've done a really good job of, whether it's the deep ball or number four creating stuff with his feet. We've got to do a good job at all three levels. Looking at them on tape, they're very well coached. They execute, and we're going to have a really good week of practice to make sure we minimize some of that. Easier said than done.
Most definitely it is. And this will be the most physical team the Pokes have seen. I can't even think back to when they're going to see some, like you said, maybe that Texas team.
Maybe.
Because these guys are big and physical. They got those bookend tackles that are probably both first-rounders. Fano is for sure.
Yep.
And then, you know, Spencer Barton, the linebacker, is an all-league player as well.
Who also plays some offense, by the way.
Another Brian Urlacher.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Dampier. I mean, we all saw what he did to the Pokes defense last year. Wyoming was very fortunate to come out of that game with a win. But Utah and Kyle Whittingham have not seen Laramie in today's age either. I mean, it's been a long time since he's been to town. And with all the changes there, the sound stays in there just a little bit better with the building of the end zone complex, and the video board is much larger than I'm sure they even can imagine when they come in, because they're probably saying, oh, it only sits 25,000, blah, blah, blah. Why are we playing here? And that could come be an advantage as well, because there's only one little sliver that's going to be red.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully they aren't buying secondary tickets. But, and it's, you know, we all know what happens in night games in Laramie too, for the most part. And especially when these ranked opponents come into town, and a lot of good things happen. It's just the Pokes cannot find themselves behind the eight ball like they have against Texas Tech, 14-0, or 17-0. Missouri, 14-0. Yeah. And
took
yes,
the words right out of my
it
mouth.
Was the defense yeah. that made great big, you know, turnovers and big hits and got the Pokes back in these games. The offense has to do their job in the beginning of this.
Yep.
And keep them on their, you know, keep them on the field and keep Utah's offense
you
off the field.
Cannot turn over the ball, and you need to force a couple. You absolutely have to, which they did against Texas Tech and Missouri. And that's, I mean, that's the recipe for success. You just can't fall behind like that. I mean, this Utah team will grind your ass down. They're not going to be like Tech, and I guarantee Joey McGuire still kicks his own ass for throwing the ball as much as he did in that game. They could have, they ended up with the number one running back in the country that year. And they just quit giving him the ball, which is good news for the Cowboys. Guys, we actually have a lot of poll question or a lot of questions today from listeners. Ryan, I know you're in a different position now where you work for the university. So if you don't want to answer some of these, you know, feel free. Question from Wyoming Coug on Twitter. Did Wyoming ever consider the Pac-12, or were they ever approached by any of the other schools to gauge their interest?
All I can say is Tom Berman turned over every rock, considered every option, and Wyoming and some other schools, including UNLV, believe the path to the college football playoff is just as good in the Mountain West
yep.
as the Pac-12. And I would say with some of the additions, the Mountain West versus the Pac-12's additions, you know, there's an argument that can be made there, I would say. So, you know, it would have been cool if the 12 joined the 2 and had the Pac-14, but
yep.
that did not happen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yes. I mean, Wyoming would have said yes to this Pac-12 thing. We know why they didn't. It's TV markets, which we know. We talk about all the time, right? And so do we, Jared, that CSU owns the Denver market. But do they? I mean, technically, sure. But I tell you what, I can't even get the CSU football game while I'm driving through Denver on the radio, so I can get the Wyoming game all over the state. I can tell you that. But that's it. I mean, that's the big part of it, right? And people don't like playing in Laramie. They don't want to come to Laramie. San Diego State's been very vocal about it. They're thrilled to never come to Laramie again. And I guarantee you, well, I shouldn't say that, but Tom Berman isn't going to be interested in scheduling San Diego State anytime soon either, I would imagine.
Yeah, you might be right about the market size, but I would argue that Wyoming's brand and home field advantage are at the top of the Mountain West.
I 100% agree with that. And that landed Wyoming 3 recruits this week. 5 guys were on campus last week. Jay landed a couple more. And I've talked about that a million times on here, that Wyoming has the best home field advantage of anybody, and it's not because of altitude and stuff like that. That helps, but it's good. It's really good.
And a basketball player.
Yeah. Yeah, and a basketball player. Yep, you're right. Alex Taylor, what channel is the game on? Stupidest shit I've read this week, today anyway.
Alex, are you going to start your own little piece on this now in the newspaper or what?
Go Pokes, flow for YO. Why is Damaja Harris not playing? Shoulder injury is what Jay Sauvel said has really set him back in camp. He told me a couple weeks ago he still really has big plans for Damaja, a big-ass running back from North Texas who was injured most of last year. We saw him in camp, Ryan. I thought he looked very formidable, but he did suffer a shoulder injury.
Yeah, there's no doubt he looks the part. I would say first game, Sam Scott, 29 carries. Second game, three guys with 7 or 8 carries, even more productive.
Yeah.
There's a chance down the road they add a fourth and fifth guy into the rotation. It's a long season, and that's why Jay stacked it 8 deep.
Yep. Brian Stevens, so far this season, the offensive line has been a glaring weak spot. Do we need better personnel, better position coaching, neither or both? I guess I don't see it that way.
I don't know what games you're watching. Are you watching last year's film?
I don't see it that way. The Cowboys have run at will. They've given up a couple sacks, of course. Rex Johnson had a rough outing this week. He gave up a couple hurries in that big 15-yard loss. But Nate Geiger, who arguably had the roughest game in Akron, he's up to 87.2, according to PFF. He had a really good game against Northern Iowa.
And you also have to give the opponents credit. They're scheming against the offense, just like the offense is scheming against their defense, and they're going to catch you on a few plays, yeah. Especially after when they have film.
I don't look at this as a glaring weakness. It has not. Has it felt that way to you, Ryan?
I think both tackles are new at starting, and they're really talented guys. I think they will get the consistency as time marches on here, but you know, you have Justin Erb and some other stud tight ends that can help them out. I don't see it as a glaring weakness right now. And the interior, I would say, is going to be a strength of this team all season.
Well, and we talked about it last week, how easy it is to forget. Jack Walsh is a new center, and Caden Barnett is a new guard. And Wes King was hurt last year for a lot of the year. It's, you know, it's a pretty new operation here as well. So they'll definitely get tested this week. Corey, I knew this one was coming. Corey Bunin, are they going to have the ticketing entrance issues straightened out for the Utah game?
I was receiving text messages when I was even at the game, like, what the hell's going on? I didn't even know what they were talking about until I heard later on.
Well, Ryan put out an entire podcast basically last week with the grounds guy saying, hey, there's entrances are closed. You need to get your ass in the stadium earlier.
Yeah, the fourth gate will be open from what I understand for this game. That'll help a lot. I would say this, get your tickets scanned early, come in early, don't wait till the last minute. You know, a lot of it is people get up to the front and the scanner's like, okay, let's go, and they haven't downloaded their tickets. You can't take screenshots of your ticket anymore. You have to have it downloaded and on your phone. So make sure everyone's got that down. I know.
It's just like every other sporting event in the country.
Concert.
Help your dad out, help your grandpa out, make sure everyone's ready to roll. We're not all great with technology, but...
And do it before you get there, because, you know, when there's 25, 30,000 people partying around the stadium before you go in there, the Wi-Fi is, it's hard, and there's not a lot of cell coverage either, so download it before you leave your house.
Yeah,
when
this
you're
is
on
also
full Wi-Fi.
A 6 p.m. kickoff instead of 2 p.m., so plenty of time to tailgate and still get in early and walk around the new war. It's cool.
Awesome, yeah. I had a guy who was in the running for the stupidest shit I've read all week, and that was my video of the entrance when the Cowboys come into the field, and he's like, look at all those empty seats when you can clearly see thousands of people trying to get in the gate. It was packed. It was packed. The thing we talked about before we came on the air, I'm stunned how many people stand where the old knot hole is. I cannot believe that thing is 30 deep. It's packed. How the hell are they watching the game? Are they all turned watching the Jumbotron?
Some people just live and die to stand in the end zone and watch games, and I don't get it because you cannot see anything.
No, you can't. And there's people standing around the field. Yeah, no way. No way. Jason Ferguson, should Sam Harris be getting more and more action as the week goes on? He looks like a real difference maker.
Yeah, I think Jay said that. The more of Sam, the better. Yeah. I think we forget that he's a true freshman because he does not look like one.
No.
But yeah, he gives them that dynamism, that explosiveness that maybe the other guys don't quite have. He's a special player.
Yeah. He said he can do things that no running back he's ever had here could even dream of doing.
Is that a word? Dynamism?
I believe it is.
I believe it. I'll take Ryan's word for it
too,
on this one.
But I don't think I've ever heard it before.
Ryan Gamez, coach understands that Utah is a good team. Watch the press conference. A lot of praise and humbleness. Didn't hear how the boys have a chance and what's being done. Strategy of not giving away the game plan, maybe? Maybe you answer this during your podcast. I understand they are tough, but if there's a will, there's a way, right? I thought Jay was a little overboard yesterday with his praise of Utah and not really pumping up his own guys.
Well, I think, you know, he said he was going to research the rivalry. Maybe he's read about the middle finger and the talking to the students about beating Utah. I will say this, history suggests Wyoming will have a great plan. I think the Texas Tech game, defensively, we caught them off guard with something different. So I would expect a new wrinkle. I don't think Wyoming's emptied the playbook against either of their first two opponents.
Yeah.
But with their playmakers, can you afford to have just a spy on Dampier? I mean, you know, I know you have to a certain extent in certain formations probably, but can you afford to do it 100% of the time?
Well, I do love that our linebackers this year, especially Braden Johnson, are as big as Dampier. Not a lot of teams can say that. The dude is he's a menace.
He's built.
The key is getting to the guy. I mean, he's very elusive. But I think if Braden Johnson and Stuhlsatz and some of these guys can get to him, they can actually bring him down where a lot of teams can't.
No. Riley Richardson, looking forward to seeing Max White have a few more carries. His one early carry when he got face masked, he looked like he had an impressive burst. Look forward to seeing Svoboda get the ball in his hands. His carry was dang close to being a score. For consecutive weeks, Braden Johnson is a beast. My only question is from guys that have watched, what is Sandvik's realistic range? That 48-yarder wasn't just a little short. Guessing that would have maybe been good from 40. For those that were criticizing Jay for not kicking the field goal against Akron, makes sense now. Pokes played great against Northern Iowa. Should have been 34-0, in my opinion. Yeah, 13 penalties, 115 yards. We skimmed right over that fact. Looking forward to this week. Utah's a hell of a team, but anything can happen in Laramie.
Yeah, two things, Cody. I think, didn't Samick have like a 60-yarder in the spring?
He
has a leg.
Yeah.
Something happened
on that first one.
I just think Jay's philosophy is different than from when, you know, they had Hoyland and Craig Bull would like to trot him out there for 58-yarders all the time because he would come through most times. I think they want to get Sandvik's confidence up with more of the 40 to 45-yarders.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the situation calls and it's go time and the game's on the line and there's 2 seconds left, he has the leg. And to your point about turnovers, that's obviously you can't turn the ball over against Utah, but they need to cut those penalties at least in half to beat the Utes.
Oh, man, do they ever.
I'm glad there was a fast-forward button on the replay of the game because it would have added another 30 minutes, I think, if I had to watch it.
Yeah. Cowboys literally probably pitch another shutout.
And a few of those calls, I mean, just flat horseshit.
Yeah.
We can say it. They can't.
Yeah.
I mean, they were bad. I mean, think about what Northern Colorado's going through this week.
Oh, my God.
With that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I had to bring that up.
Ouch.
Because CSU turns the ball over 6 times. The Bears have a chance to win that game, and then they overturned that.
I know.
There was not 1% of a turnover. I mean, to turn that play over the way they did.
That was heartbreaking.
I don't see how. And I haven't seen one thing from the Mountain West about it.
I think somebody put a story up today, but I didn't have a chance to read it. But I think Football Scoop or something like that. I thought, too, they missed a hold on Jaden Williams in the end zone. That could have been a safety easily. They also missed a blatant pass interference against a Wyoming receiver in the northeast corner.
Well, then the defensive holding
that
Jaden got called on
for
pulling the guy on a blitz.
Eller was in there so damn quick, I didn't even think they had time to hold somebody. But
and then the late hit on Eller, too, was just like, what?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that one was
and
tough.
And that line judge waddled up there and threw that flag. I mean, these guys have got to get in shape. I said it last year. They have got to be in shape and be able to stay up with the ball. I mean, that's just...
Jay, when he walked into his press conference, was like, I'm on super secret probation until November 1st for his horseshit officiating reference last year. So he wasn't even about to get started on
That's
officiating
weird that
this
it's
week.
A full calendar year.
Isn't that crazy?
Versus
yeah.
Just a season.
He doesn't touch that stuff anymore.
Explain that to me, Ryan. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Waylon Sitake, with this being the first tough test for the defense, which defensive group has the most approved this week, or is it a prove-it game for the defense as a whole? I think it's a big week for this young secondary because listening to Kyle Whittingham today, he is not thrilled with the lack of explosive plays. They only had 13 of them last week against Cal Poly, or what, 8 of them, I mean. But it's more what we're seeing from Wyoming, some short throws that turn into explosive plays like Chris Durs at Akron. That's what happened with Wayshon Parker last week. They dump him a little pass. He goes 50 yards for a touchdown. Utah hasn't been pushing the ball downfield as much. I think that's something they're going to try this week. Marky Grant and Tyrese Boss have been really, really good so far. Desmond Hearns obviously had a pick in the game. He was the Cowboys' best pass defender this week, according to Pro Football Focus. I think that unit it's huge for them because also you can't count on getting much of a pass rush against these tackles. I mean, you just can't. And I really like Wyoming's pass rushers, but this is a whole new ball game. Jay was making this Fanu guy sound like he was Tony Mandrich yesterday. I mean, that's what it sounded like.
I'll be very interested to watch their tackles because sounds like they're both headed to the NFL and are big guys, obviously, and very talented and athletic. Why Jay said that they're such highly touted. But, you know, sometimes when you have a smaller pass rusher, you know, like Isaiah Bogar or Tyce Westland, they can get around those bigger guys. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get around them or stunt or do whatever they can do to make some hay there. You know, Dampier obviously last year against Wyoming hurt him with his legs more so than the pass. So I'd be interested to see if Wyoming can make him pass, beat us passing the ball, or if they're balanced or if they just decide to try to run over Wyoming.
Well, I'll tell you, last year, New Mexico put Wyoming's defensive tackles on skates and opened the floodgates every single snap. It was night and day. Tyce Westland told me yesterday that defense didn't communicate, they weren't nearly as talented, and it was just a complete disaster. Braden Wilson, who played at Weber State, actually faced Fano a couple years ago when they played in Salt Lake City. He said he was sicker than a dog. He finished with 8 tackles. He didn't get a sack in that game, but he had 8 tackles against Utah. So a little sliver of hope there. And of course, Braden being from Larry, he's called now because there's 2 Bradens. Larry Wilson, he's obviously from the Ogden area. So he was recruited by Utah. So was Jalen Sargent.
Our offensive line goes 6'6", 304, 6'6", 307, 6'6", 315, 6'4", 310, 6'6", 302.
I found out talking to Tote, he was recruited by Utah.
Really?
He's another one of these stories of a Wyoming guy who had a lot of power offers, tore his ACL in high school.
Yep.
Wyoming said, don't worry about it. We rehab ACLs better than anyone.
Yep.
And he stuck with Wyoming. So you're talking about a high-end Big 12 running back in Tode Harris, and you know it'll be interesting to see how he does against these big guys. Oh,
great. Now we got to hear about he's not going to be here.
Yeah, well, he won't be. I'm actually shocked we haven't heard that more to start this season.
I think people are just used to it now.
I will give some credit where it's due. Quinn Clark, through 2 games, the tackling has been lights out. 2 missed tackles last week. Is this a product of the talent on the field versus years past, or is it something Bull is doing differently? Also, Durr, Brantley appear to have great speed. Why do we keep everything so close to the line and attempt very few deeper routes? It seems there are more opportunities downfield that would keep the opponent guessing. Finally, will they have the ticket technology dialed in this week? Having 10,000 fans stand in line trying to get in while the team takes the field is a problem. I think it's better talent and it's more depth. I just do. I mean, I think we all kind of get caught up in this. You're like, Shea Suenoa, and I'm not dumping on these guys, don't get me wrong, but Shea Suenoa, Connor Shea, they've paid their dues. They've been in this program for so long. That doesn't mean they're the best option available. And they were the only option available for the Wyoming Cowboys a year ago. Same with Wyatt Eckler and Isaac White. I mean, these are all great players that I'm mentioning, but we're seeing this year that They've upgraded in a lot of ways, and what's even more impressive to me is Jones Thomas and Andrew Johnson are two guys that were on this team. They've been on this team for a couple few years, and now they're the starters. Out of all the change they brought into the secondary, those are your two starting safeties. So I think it's, like we just talked about, communication. I think it's also, it's not just T-shirt slogan shit this year. I think it's personal they wear on their back. It is personal. They were embarrassed last year. Devin Dampier, it's amazing Wyoming won that game. He shouldn't even have thrown the ball to get pick six by Rook Brown.
You brought it up. I think Aaron Bowl was feeling himself out last year as well as a coordinator, trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the personnel is totally different. But you look now at the last four games the Cowboys have played, that defense was nights and day different than the first part of the year. Because
absolutely.
Boise State game, Washington State, shut out at Akron, and, you know, damn near shut out with Northern Iowa.
Yeah.
It's just a different schemes and different personnel, and like I said, communication's better.
And health. They had horrendous luck with health last year, especially on the back end with Eckler and White. So I think that makes a huge difference as well. Durer, Brantley, those guys, why are they throwing not deeper routes? You know, probably just getting comfortable, getting things going, getting the ball in your playmaker's hands. I think J-Mike last week, every yard he had was after the catch. He was catching everything at the line of scrimmage, and he was making plays. That stuff will eventually open up. They're also feeling out the offensive line, like we talked about. He needs to have some time back there.
And they're using some of these plays to set up other plays off of those later on down the road against different opponents as
no
well.
Doubt. No
yeah,
doubt.
I like the quick game stuff early in the season because right now you just want to make sure J-Mike and Chris Dirk get the ball in their hands. They can make people miss with anyone.
Yep.
I'll go back to the Tiller days. A lot of those passes to Yarbrough and Harris over the top. And
great, you know, point.
Those were all set up by plays from Brent Tillman, a Mike Jones, people like that underneath to set those up. They suck the defensive up, and then all of a sudden those guys are streaking down the vertical and, you know, whether down the seam or on the sideline, then it's touchdown.
At some point,
this three-headed monster keeps rolling, which will be tough this week, obviously, but teams are going to have to try to stop the run, and then all of a sudden Brantley is wide open and Caden Anderson has the time to let it rip.
And we know he can throw a beautiful deep pass.
Yeah.
So
well, that's a great point about Harris and Yarbrough. I mean, and even Bonide. How many times did you see those guys catching balls 30 yards over the field? I mean, they were catching balls at the 10-yard mark and then making it a 30-yard play. I mean, and Yarbrough had the speed to – he was getting to the end zone, which he did, 42 times? Pretty special. Chase Corrigan here. Wyoming's defense has allowed just 7 total points through the first two games. While Utah leads the nation in third down conversion at 77% and boasts one of the top rushing attacks in the country, if our defense can hold, do you think the offense can keep it close enough to give us a shot? If the Cowboys manage to squeak this out, what do you think that says about the rest of the season? Does it put us in position to make this year ours?
Well, this is not the most important home game of the season.
No.
Colorado State is. UNLV is more important. But I just see this as one of those opportunities like we've been talking about to beat a Power 4 team like Texas Tech or Missouri, Ole Miss back in the day. It's just one of those opportunities. If you play them competitive for 60 minutes and lose and win the Mountain West, you're still in the mix for bigger things.
I think that's the most important thing, and we talked about that when we kicked off the year. You can't get your ass kicked this week or against Colorado. You keep these close, that's going to give you – I know nobody wants to hear about moral victories and stuff. I don't either. But like you said, it's an opportunity, and if you do win this or win these, then you're springboarded pretty good. And as we've seen from the Mountain West early on, yeah, UNLV's 3-0. Impressive 3-0 in some ways. San Jose State looks very beatable. Everybody in this conference looks beatable right now.
The interesting thing to me about the college football playoff era with the expansion, and now you have this Pac-12 and Mountain West fight out west, the selection committee obviously is going to mostly pick that playoff team from the group of six based on non-conference. You're looking at it right now with South Florida. They're penciled in because they beat Boise State and Florida, and now they play Miami.
Yeah.
I don't even think they need to beat Miami. They just need to win their conference now. If Wyoming has this schedule in the future, a schedule like this, and you were able to you know, hang with a Big 12 champion Utah and upset a Colorado and then win the Mountain West, you're going to the college football playoff. I don't care if you don't have the Pac-12 logo on your jersey or not.
Yeah, no doubt. Shea Foster, 2006, John Wendling murdered Ratcliffe, like we were talking about earlier, with a well-timed safety blitz. The Utah team had given up zero sacks before Wyoming lived in their backfield that day. Do you think the D can do that same thing against a stout Utah line this time around?
It's all about timing. Yep. I mean, you got to pick your poison, and hopefully you pick it right.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, then you are going to get burned over the top, most likely. But, yeah, I mean, they have to get some hits on Dampier to make him – you know, be aware of this defense can do it. And, you know, once or twice, hopefully rattle that ball loose, too, while you're doing it.
It helped that Ratliff was a sitting duck. Dampier's not.
No. I'm so encouraged with how Ben Florentine is playing. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of sacks from that position. He is getting off the ball and sacking people. And Jaden Williams looks like a player, and he really had a great week last week. I think he's just going to get better and better and better. And Lucas Samsula is a load in there.
Yes,
I think that's something we kind of forget about with last year's defense is Lucas got hurt. He would have been in there instead of some other guys.
Caleb Robinson out.
Some other injuries in the secondary really threw that defense off. So now you have those guys back. You have some great additions and 28 players last week. I mean,
it's incredible.
It's incredible what's going on over one offseason.
Yeah, no doubt. Also from Shea Foster, Wyoming offensive line has been up and down where one guy has a down game, then rebounds. One guy has a great game, then drops. We talked about that with Geiger and Rex Johnson already, two young tackles. Do you foresee the offensive line having a more consistent game this week? Herb had the highest rating in blocking against you and I. I do have a story about Justin Herb, former walk-on. He sprung the Sam Harris touchdown run on Saturday. Do you foresee the offensive line having a day like that? I'll tell you this, John Henry Daly is a scary defensive end, and these guys are loaded across the board. So you'd hope, but it's just so hard to say.
I do like that Walsh and Barnett were in that Texas game, and if you recall some of the monsters – sat on that line.
Uh-huh.
I believe one of them, who was a top 10 pick, said that Wyoming gave him more fits than anyone that year, and Washington's O-line won the award as the nation's best, and they played them in the playoffs. So they have to have one of those nights where they rise up to the level of play like that.
Yeah, Sweat was playing in Mile High Stadium on Sunday for the Tennessee Titans. So pretty good player. All right, fellas, I think that's all the questions we've got. Now time for our favorite segment of the week. Stupidest shit I read this week. I got a JC in the Rock on Twitter with a dandy. This is in reply to my tweet yesterday. Quarterback Cade Anderson should be ready to go for Utah, per Jay Sauvel. Had some bruising in the upper part of his body. He should practice today. JC in the Rock says, not sure this is good news. Awful savvy in the pocket. Oh, you have the same one. Beautiful. Looks confused way too often. Misses way too many throws. Landon Sims looks just as bad.
Stick to your basketball recruiting, JC. I know you follow all that stuff, so stick to it. You don't know anything about football.
Oh, my God. I was shocked. I was like, are we watching? And I got the same thing from Kevin Stavely or something, too, that – see, I told you, look how terrible this offense is. And you're just like, you got to put some things in perspective, right? I mean, that was Caden Anderson's fifth college football start. This guy also tore his ACL twice coming out of high school, missed a ton of time. He hasn't played in a real football game in years until last year. And he's got a whole new cast around him for the most part. I mean, there are some veterans, but he's a new quarterback. And he's played really well. I mean, he's making – they're giving him good short throws, but he also made the long one to Holman against Akron. And Landon Sims, it kind of speaks for itself, doesn't it? I mean, he's 3-for-3.
And if this is still happening November 1, we'll eat crow.
Sure.
But don't bring it up game, you know, 5 of his career and game 2
of
this
season. He's had a couple
of
little lulls. He had a lull at Akron. He had a little lull this week. My concern right now is two of the 5 starts he's had, he's left with an injury. And I'd also be willing to say that if he didn't run into his own lineman after that huge hit on Saturday, that had concussion written all over it if his head hits the turf.
Yep, probably.
So that's my concern with him right now. And like we talked about earlier, Landon Sims, I feel really pretty damn good about Landon Sims.
Yeah, and coach already backed that up too, saying that they all feel comfortable if he has to take snaps this week.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Like we do.
Yep.
Mine is the KJ Stavely guy, and he goes by Smooth. Well, your delivery isn't very smooth, I'll tell you that. Zero discipline, an absolutely atrocious offense. This is piss-poor coaching. There's no more excuses. Jay is a joke. Goes on, not even 5 minutes later, at the game. This team is exactly what I've been telling you. They are piss-poorly coached and undisciplined. The state of Wyoming deserves better. Jay is a joke. I have a feeling this guy's just a troll, and he wants to be read on the air, and he wants to be seen on Twitter.
Well, he did tell me that he's not a troll when he responded to me, because I said, offense, question mark? The offense is moving the ball up and down the field at will here. I don't understand what we're watching. But.
And, I mean, if things go the way that some of these trolls think they're going to go on Saturday night, it's going to get worse that weekend, this weekend too, but it's just...
Don't make it your goal to land on this segment. Please.
I could have picked a couple others too, but I didn't.
I love it. I love having fun with that. It's our way of spitting water and
back. Do you have any, Brian?
Well, I don't want to get in hot water with any of our fine scribes that cover the team or any of our fans who are very passionate.
Just say it was Alex Taylor by asking if the game was on TV.
I will say there's a lot of power rankings out there, and I did notice the Barstool Mountain West going into the season at Wyoming, 11th in the power rankings ahead of New Mexico. They could be right. I seriously doubt, though. I would say after 2 weeks that Wyoming has turned some heads in that direction. I know they also had Colorado State 2 in that ranking. So, I think Northern Colorado has something to say about that.
Yeah, that one still hurts. Let's get into the betting odds and some games this week, Jerry.
Yeah, last week went 6-5, damn it. 12-11 overall, entertainment purposes only. New Mexico at UCLA, getting 15.5 points. I will take New Mexico until the Bruins can show otherwise, because
boy, they're bad.
They are bad.
Yeah, they're really
bad. And I don't know if that coach makes it to the Big Ten season. I don't know if he does.
Boy, they're in for a rough
ride. If they lose to New Mexico, he's gone.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Yeah. Well, before you keep going, is Jay Norvell still employed today if they lose that game?
Yeah, because I don't think they can afford to do anything different.
Well, he's out. His contract's up. So I wonder if that would be a spot where they'd go, all right, let's make Mummy the interim for the rest of the year and start over. I mean, that would have been a devastating loss.
First ever win.
Yeah.
For the Bears against CSU,
And UNC is not a good FCS team like Wyoming lost to last year, which I'm not giving Wyoming an excuse. They should have never lost to Idaho, but that's a bad, bad, bad loss. At home opener, the team that's right across the highway.
Well, it was so devastating that they're off this week. So
I'm wondering if they're going to open the quarterback competition this week.
Yeah, I didn't watch anything other than a couple of highlights. He doesn't look like the same player.
No. He looks very unconfident. He very unsure of his throws. It's pretty bad.
I mean,
darn it.
Is it that big of a difference not having Horton there as his comfort?
I don't think so. I think the tight end thing's probably more of an issue, but they seem to have a nice tight end now, too. Anyway, sorry to get you off track there.
No problem. Middle Tennessee State goes to Reno. Nevada is a 9-point favorite. I will I'll lay the points with Nevada on that one. Air Force at Utah State. Utah State's getting 4 points at home. And from what we've heard, Air Force is not the same that, you know, the preseason rankings thought they might be and stuff. So I'm going to take Utah State at home. I think Bronco and the Aggies at least hold that one close. And maybe if they lose, by a field.
The only thing that's scary, obviously, is Air Force is very fresh and they're coming off a bye week already in week two.
Which, that's crazy that some of these teams are on bye weeks already.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway. Southern at Fresno State and Portland State at Hawaii. Those lines are not out yet. I'll take both Mountain West teams at home by 20, 21 and below.
Yeah.
Put it that way. I'm sure that those lines might be bigger than that, actually. Then, of course, Utah at Wyoming. Pokes getting 23.5. I will take those points all day long.
Started at 25.5, right?
I saw it at 22.5. Then it went to 23.5. Went back down to 22.5. I did find one at 23.5 before I came in, just to keep it at that. But also, I'm going to sprinkle a little bit on Wyoming to win outright on the money line. That's a plus 1,300. So if you were to bet $10, you'd win 130 with a poke win.
Yeah. Well, like you said, the weird stuff happens. Are there any big games? Any other?
There's quite a few big games this weekend. After last weekend was kind of a ho-hum, you know, national weekend, there are some top 25 games to go with. Let's see. Clemson's at Georgia Tech. We all know that it's not easy to go into Bobby Dodd Stadium. Let's see. Wisconsin. The interesting game here is Wisconsin at Alabama. Alabama's favored by 21.5.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Not the way they're playing.
No.
And he might be gone if Alabama loses this game.
Did you hear the lady call into Feinbaum? If I win the $1 billion lottery, I'm going to buy Kalen DeBoer out first.
I'll give him to charity. If you have a chance to listen to that show, those Alabama fans are something else. I mean, all SEC fans are at a different level, but the Alabama fans, they take it. Oh, here's a good one for you. Villanova at number 2 Penn State. Number 6 Georgia at Tennessee is a good one. Oregon State at Texas Tech, and I bring that up because that's who Utah plays next week, so it'll be a top 25 matchup most likely.
Yeah, Oregon State's so bad. Holy hell, are they bad.
South Florida.
Beavers play the Ducks after they get back from Lubbock.
Ooh. Ouch.
That might be a 50-50 burger.
Yeah.
Whatever Lanning wants.
Lanning going to be at Florida next year?
I don't know. I think he's happy at Oregon right now. He has young kids, and you know, you can do at Oregon what you can do at Florida these days.
Yeah,
a lot less travel though, if you go to Florida.
That's true, but Uncle Phil's still chipping in.
That's
true. NIL,
so that's true.
Big difference.
The surprise team so far: South Florida, number 18 in the country, goes to number 5 Miami, and then
what a story! Wouldn't that be quite the deal?
Texas A&M goes to Notre Dame.
I'm not sure there is such thing as a South Florida fan, but I guarantee they looked at that schedule before the year and went, uh-oh.
Go Bulls.
Yeah, this is going to be another rough one. All right, guys, I don't know if you're at liberty to do this, Ryan, and be honest about it or not, but prediction time before we wrap up here for the week. Wyoming and Utah, a rivalry renewed. These teams have played 1.5 million times. It's really good to have them back. I will give the Utes this credit, and we talked about it a little bit. They were supposed to come here in 2020, and I think it would have been real easy for them to say, all right, maybe that was a sign from God that we don't need to be going to Laramie. And instead they kept their word, and here they are. And can't knock them for that. That's the same reason I have a ton of respect for the Texases of the world. Don't tell him Nebraskas. That they came here when they most certainly didn't have to. So I'm going to give you the homer pick because I can't pick Utah. I really want Wyoming to win this game badly. I think Wyoming can pull it off. I really do. I really feel like they can figure out a way. In the end, it's going to be tight. It's going to be a nail-biter, to say the least, if that does happen. But I think the Cowboys keep this one, maybe – maybe say Utah 36, Wyoming 23, something like that. Keep it respectable, keep it close. I just feel like Utah is on a different level. Wyoming's pissed off and has a chip on their shoulder from last year. Magnify that chip by 100 times for a Utah team that what has been to 18 bowl games in 21 years under Kyle Whittingham. They're not used to going 5-7 and being left out in the cold during the postseason. So Wyoming has a chip. They're pissed. They're playing like it. So is Utah, unfortunately. I think the Utes probably find a way in this one, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to, along those lines with you, Wyoming will keep it closer than the experts think. You know, like a 31-17, mm-hmm. something like that, 31-21. If Wyoming is to win this game, we already talked about, they have to create turnovers, not turn the ball over themselves, be clean, no hankies, unnecessary hankies, put it that way.
Yeah.
And keep Caden upright. Of course, and then just contain Dampier. And if they're able to do that, I can see a 27-24, 28-27 win, something like that.
I'll just say I have a good feeling about Wyoming. I don't know if they're going to win. I think they're going to like we've talked about, this is when people ask me after fall camp, what do you think about the team? It's always hard to tell when you're going against each other, Brown versus Gold.
Yep.
I just said this team would whip last year's Wyoming team's butt.
Yeah.
Talent upgrades, depth upgrades, attitude. And, you know, Wyoming's team last year hung in with BYU for a while and made some mistakes, and it got away from
the opening kickoff of the second half.
This team is much better, so I definitely think it could be a special night, and if it is, I'll see you guys at the Buck afterwards.
Boy, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Kickoff scheduled for 6 p.m. The game will be on CBS Sports Network. Thank you, Jared, as always. Ryan, glad you came over the hill and joined us today. Good luck to your daughter. Is it state?
No, she's playing South today.
Oh, just match up against South? Yeah. Tennis. Get over to South and watch Ryan's daughter play tennis, would you? Thanks again for coming, Ryan.
Yeah,
appreciate
anytime,
you, man.
Guys.
The war is going to be really exciting on Saturday night. The atmosphere is going to be incredible. It's already the best atmosphere in the Mountain West. Looking forward to the country seeing that. And then, of course, 8:15 the following Saturday in Boulder, Colorado against the Buffs. So we will see you next week. Oh, so, but that's my own.